Your old or broken phone can let you down. But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on MyPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special Criterion physical media episode here on One Heat Minute Productions. I'm your host, Blake Howard, and today we are talking about the absolutely epic release of Anthony Mann's Winchester 73. A very long time ago, I was speaking to Quentin Tarantino at the release of his film, The Hateful Eight, and at the time, I was talking to him about what he'd learned about being a Western filmmaker at that time after a Django and Hateful Eight double feature, and he immediately discounted the concept that he was even doing that because he said, Blake, I think you have to make five Westerns to be considered a Western filmmaker. And the first person, it wasn't John Ford, it wasn't Howard Hawks. The first person he mentioned is like, to be a real master like Anthony Mann, you have to make at least five Westerns. And so today we're reviewing the absolutely gorgeous new 4K special edition of Winchester 73. And why would I want to talk to anyone except for one of my dear friends, the legendary video essayist and author, and particularly, like in a dream, I said to him before I even knew that this great project existed, I said, God, you've got to be an Anthony Mann guy, right? And he literally sent back the cover of a book called The Black Book. An Anthony Mann reader. It's my legendary friend, Scott Tafoya. Scott, how are you, my friend?
God, I'm so happy to be back. You don't even know. I feel at home in the One Heat Minutes universe.
So happy to have you home. We're so happy to have you home. Just you and me in a black portrait for a lovely lady to find. Us together, just stoically.
Anthony Mann's Winchester 73 from 1950. Noirish shadows spread across the frontier in this landmark western, the first of the celebrated collaborations between director Anthony Mann and actor James Stewart, that redefined the genre with their moral and psychological intensity. Beginning his mid-career transition into increasingly edgy roles, Stewart portrays an avenging sharpshooter whose stolen rifle becomes a harbinger of death as it is passed from one doomed hand to the next. Featuring a stellar cast that includes a touching Shelley Winters, a sensationally sleazy Dan Dorea, and a pre-stardom Rock Hudson, this elemental tale of violence begetting violence broke new ground with its evocation of the West as a no man's land of anti-heroes and villains.
It's a film that I think lends itself to a 4K restoration because it has a very simple dynamic lighting-wise, where it's all lots of deep shadows, really beautiful crowd sequences, or you're losing people very deliberately in a landscape.
Yes.
But he does not overcomplicate the frame. And he was like that generally, where when he was filming with John Alden, you know, it was the little square frame, it was the Academy ratio frame, and there'd be things moving in and out of shadow and all that. But you were really only asked to look at one or two things at a time. And that kind of stayed his media, even when he was making the huge epics for Samuel Bronson. Really the problem with those is that they don't have the simplicity of his best movies. I mean, you know, even his last two, Heroes of Telemark and Danny and Aspic, they're movies that tell you where to look. You know, they're movies with insane visual intelligence. And Winchester 73 is very intuitive in that way, where you know who everybody is. That's the like the kind of interesting thing that you say, that like one of them's good, one of them's bad. You know basically right away that Jimmy Stewart is so angry at Dutch Henry that he can't contain himself. Like, he's doing this thing because he's hoping to kind of get one over on him, and it backfires, and he spends the rest of the movie in pursuit of it, largely off screen, which is interesting. And then, you know that this guy's going to go there and do this, and it's all this directional framing. But what it means is the things that have to be cleaned up and perfectly in focus, you know, the things that your restorer makes sure are as perfect as possible, it just highlights everything he's already done so well.
Yes.
So I'm dying to see the new transfer. I think it's probably going to, I mean, you know, you've seen it. Is it as gorgeous as it promises?
It is absolutely gorgeous. His landscape framing is peerless, even in the speed ups, you know, like the classic. There's something that we've become familiar with if you're a Western fan, and I would encourage you to watch it just for the pacing of a movie. This thing is 92 minutes and it moves. Bless 90-minute movies. Bless them. They can tell amazing, impactful, memorable, and also rewatchable stories in 90 minutes. But the thing that has such a dynamism for me is that, like, you feel like he's almost putting a pressure point on the Academy ratio to show you the scale of a frame and people's motivations within the frame. So, like, you've always usually got a central focal point, but it's one of the rare movies you can say is like the person who is just dancing on the edge of clean focus is almost the most interesting person in every single composition in this movie. Like, he does this weird thing where he's like, I know that the character I want your eye to be on is front and center, but just look at he's offsider, whether it's, you know, right at the front, you've got a Shelley Winters, and then off in the corner is like a cheeky Dan Duryea playing like Waco Johnny Dean, like being like, you know, conniving. And so many great Jimmy Stewart, he plays Lee McAdam, and his main offsider, his dear friend, played by Millard Mitchell, Highspade. And Highspade will be off in the corner watching him and kind of giving like an eye or like a commentary almost on, you know, what is this moment more dangerous than it is? Is it more playful than it is? Does it have any malevolence? It is just like there is such an invaluable understanding from Anthony Mann about supporting the significance of supporting characters, even when they're not speaking.
He's the thing. One of the things I kind of, you know, had a fun time discovering as I was going through the entire body of work is just how Shakespearean a filmmaker he is.
Oh, yeah.
Where you think about, you know, the ends of Twelfth Night, or, you know, the middle of Midsummer Night's Dream, where you've got all of the characters on stage looking at each other, talking over each other, you know, complicating what's happening down here by being up there. That is very much how he worked. And the Westerns were his most Shakespearean movies.
Yeah.
You know, there's a different kind of theatricality in some of the other things, stuff like T-Men or Dandy or Border Incident is you know, another one where there's the theatrical concept of somebody playing someone that we know who they are. Nobody else knows who they are. Border Incident being shot on location, one of the like first major films to do so after Jules Dassin's Naked City kind of popularized it again in 1948. It means that he can't stage it with quite the same exactitude, but then you get to the West and you get to place people in the frame you want to, because you've bought all of that, you know, desert space in which to do it. And because it's so wide, you get to treat it like a proscenium. And Winchester, by virtue of being about small pockets of civilization, means that you've got, you know, five or six people dotting every composition anyway, and sometimes a good deal more. And it's thus the whole story about property, about owning the rifle and owning the sort of moral high ground and all that, is then reflected in everywhere you go. There's a little standoff that has to happen. You've got the gambler who's guilty at the frontier scouts. It's a stupendously and meticulously thought through film in that way. And it just never stops revealing itself and explaining why everything that is happening is happening. It all underlines the theme, and it all primes you perfectly so that when Jimmy Stewart is off screen, you know that when he comes back, there is this all this extra undergirding to the mission of revenge. And also sort of put his anger in a place that makes a little more sense, that it's like, yeah, no, he's only experienced what he's experienced, but this gun has made its way across so many different people who have so many other reasons to kill. And
yes,
it's pretty unbelievable. And he was great at that idea. I mean, man, I think if he's famous for anything, it's for the B movies. What they trusted with in the '40s. It's how he came up. And the best of these, we must say, is The Black Book or Reign of Terror, which is what I named the book after, because they staged the French Revolution in a studio closet for like, you know, like a regular PRC budget. It costs no money, $0.00. And it's beautiful and it's staged perfectly. And it's got William Cameron Menzies production design, which back then was the best special effect money could buy. And, you know, and so having the intelligence of the B-movie filmmaker who is making the bad script into high art is exactly what you need for something like Winchester, where it seems like a regular Western. And this was the time when they were, I believe, probably at their their highest productivity, all the studios at making Westerns.
Yeah.
And he makes it amazing and completely, as you say, peerless. It is not a movie that reminds you of much else. No. It is totally Anthony Mann, and it's just fucking beautiful.
It's beautiful. And it's also, it's one of those rare films that, as a huge Deadwood fan, that you can see the DNA of other Westerns. And usually people will point to, you know, the roughness of Peckinpah and then sometimes, rarely, but sometimes, you know, a couple of the Ed Bianchi episodes, you know, a bit of stylistically Sergio, like people are trying to give you some of those moments, but obviously it's within the confines of shooting on, you know, a very dynamic, but a television show nonetheless. But what struck me the most watching Winchester again is like, oh no, this is it. This is actually what Deadwood is. It is about motivations. It's about people with rich, colorful, sometimes dark histories. It's then about individual motivations. It's about your relationships from town to town, from scene to scene, from relationship to relationship within the town. And it's just like, and it just so effortlessly uses gigantic, titanic Western archetypal characters and then just fucking discards them. It's beautiful. And I was just like, the intelligence of that is so crazy, because filmmakers are so lazily, feverishly trying to cling on to IP in our contemporary age, largely motivated by the financiers of their different films. It's like no one would allow you, you know, it even happened on Deadwood. It's like, oh, we need more Buffalo Bill in the first X amount of episodes. When Buffalo Bill goes, then the show isn't as good anymore. Some, you know, recent very bad opinions to that effect. And we're not going to even go there. But what I love so much is that Winchester's like, no, Wyatt Earp's in the show. Yeah, he's in the show, but he's in the show for the first chapter, like literally the first or second chapter. We don't need to see him again. His name gets mentioned a couple of times. How does he know that these guys are going to go and do this? How do people know this stuff? And it does get mentioned. It's a bit of a recurring motif, but the bravery of like, no, I know the strength of my characters and I know the strength of their conflict, the protagonist and antagonist, and they're going to just chart the story of the frontier and the hostility of the region and the perilousness with every move across every piece of landscape for every reason. And so I can just move on. I don't have to have that.
And in the way that Deadwood introduces 100 people for you to follow and then cordons you off with each of them for their own intrigue and their own moral journey, this film does the same thing. It just does it across out the landscape, which gives you an even better sense of who people are, because it's one thing to hide yourself in a crowd. It's another thing to be where you think no one else sees you, or only, you know, that you've made yourself in front of. It's funny. Deadwood is perfect because in Lynn McAdams, like with every Stewart hero for Anthony Mann, you've got somebody like Seth Bullock, who is internally tormented and knows that there is a right way for things to go, and yet has been pushed just so far outside of, you know, the normal confines of a social construct, and can't quite bring himself to do it. I mean, you know, it's a tough list to top, but him at the final minutes of The Naked Spur finally crying because he's got Robert Ryan, he's finally done the thing and he's killed the man, and like, how do you, in a Western in 1952, they did this. Truly astonishing shit.
For like, no money.
Yeah. Yeah. For no money.
For $0.
And most of that monologue is ADR. You can tell. Like, it's in, he re-recorded it in a studio because you can hear the echoing. Fucking unbelievable. It's truly unbelievable. And yeah, it's also just like a kind of like a one-to-one. Dan Duryea in this as Waco Johnny, that is like every heel on Deadwood. Like, that is absolutely heel. It's the guy they hang in the first episode. It's Jack McCall. It's even kind of the Wyatt Earp and Virgil Earp in Deadwood when they show up there. Virgil Earp kind of cuts a Dan Duryea-ish figure as well. There's a lot of that. And again, they both have Shakespeare in common because Milch obviously was writing modern Shakespeare when he was writing that show. And man, while he may not have exactly the sort of ear for the colorful dialogue, or certainly, you know, and he got close because like Philip Yordan wrote a lot of this, and he wrote really good stuff, but in an admittedly contemporary vernacular, which made it tough to sort of transcend the 1950s-ishness of it. But it's still very compellingly written, and most of his movies from this period are.
Yeah, it's also lean. You know, I think that's the benefit is you can write very economical dialogue, and I feel like every line has such huge connotations. It's like, oh, these, you know, who's this man that's, you know, that killed your guy? And he goes, she's not, you know, there's that great line from Shelley Winters, he's not a man, he's an animal. And you're like,
Yeah.
That's what you've detected. They're all these scavenger kind of like vulture personalities that are just picking their life and constructing their lives out of the remains of dead everything.
Yes, geez, that's a great way to look at it. Like, that's a big figure in a lot of his noir as well. In Raw Deal, it's literally, it's a criminal, and he's split between the, you know, mortified fixation and reluctant obsession of a social worker and the hanging on, no questions asked, mall. And the two women drive him as he's, you know, forcing his way through this last crime spree. Or in He Walked by Night, there's this, the Richard Basehart performance is fucking astonishing, but it's also just the idea. It's this, like, there's this thing in him that he doesn't know what to do with, and it has to express itself through violence. That is very much a man, you know, obsession. That's just who his men were. And I find it kind of beautiful that at a time where film is at this sort of ebb, you know, as far as the development of grammar and tropes and dialogue, the 50s are not a huge time for what we think of traditionally as an advancement towards, you know, you look at the 60s and everything is happening. Every week some new rule is broken and some landmark, you know, modernism comes out. In the 50s, that wasn't happening. But if you watch Mann's movies, you could be forgiven for thinking that the tide around them was way more progressive and fast moving because of how much ground he covered in no time at all. You know, he got started in 1939, but he made his first feature in 42 and then was dead by 67. You know, like, he 38 movies in about 25 years. And if you just watch the progression of his movies, you would think that the American cinema was in hyperdrive and was just moving through all of its taboos and tax. I mean, the basically the same year as Winchester 73, he also makes The Furies, perfect feminist Western, and The Tall Target, which is a great Native American sensitive Western about the impossibility of being, you know, the white man's version of the noble Indian or whatever, when they're pushing you around and taking all your land and killing everyone you know and destroying your home and your farm. It's like, he got all that done in 2 years, max. Like, unfucking believable.
Unbelievable. And even the, I think, you know, the one thing about 50s movies is that, like, you're not necessarily going to have any kind of, you can't go in expecting there's going to be the sensitivity. So you're inherently shocked when you get Anthony Mann, but there's a Rock Hudson, I would just say, like, glorified cameo as young Bull, who's a chief. And there's just this, a chief of one of the several tribes that are seeming to collaborate and just sort of take out any cavalrymen and sort of dominate and take back their patch of the frontier. Yeah. There's a great moment where he's just like, no, all white men are thieves. You take yeah. everything. And the movie doesn't judge him for saying nope. that. It is
no.
matter of fact, and everything that has happened before it is reinforcing that point, and everything that happens after it reinforces the point. And it's like, oh no, Anthony Mann gets it. Like, this is a guy who is innately aware of, like, post-war, the safest place is the place where no one has guns to murder each other, because he doesn't trust the morality of the country. So he's like, no, the town where no one has guns, where they can kill each other, is the only place that feels even remotely cordial. The cordiality is just one gun belt away from just hell. And
yeah.
I love that. And so I was just like, apart from being shocked and struck, reminding myself, where's Rock Hudson in this again? You know, like, where is he? Like, I couldn't remember where exactly he popped up. But, you know, and obviously being surprised by a little cheeky Tony Curtis in there as well. But like, I was like,
Curtis as well. Yep.
That line just hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, yeah, yeah, the whole movie. That's the thesis.
That's the
you
whole
guys
movie.
Take everything.
And it's, yeah, if you could, you know, and obviously it's pointless to have this discussion, but if you took out the white men playing Native Americans in both Devil's Doorway and Winchester 73, it obviously makes the argument much more persuasive. But it isn't as though he was doing this thing because he believed that you needed to other Native Americans. I mean, he truly, clearly felt sympathy for them at a time where even our most interesting, I mean, you know, last time I was on here, I was talking about The Searchers, which has a very, very violent reaction to Native people who, by all accounts, are just looking out for their patch of land and nevertheless get killed for it. And this, you know, man had a sympathy that was not common to a lot of the filmmakers at the time. And, you know, Your Dan and he, I think, had a fairly radical streak about them. You certainly look at the morals of most of his movies and all the crime films and stuff. They don't go out of their way to say that, you know, justice is always served or that there's a right and a wrong way to do it. And the innocent bystanders are killed in these movies all the time. It's, you know, it's basically that civilization is an incredibly messy business with no clear goals. And, you know, the idea, too, as you said, that you need to take the guns away from every man in a town to create a safe haven. What does that say about everybody in the town?
That's my fundamental thing, is that I've never truly been able to articulate it. Or maybe the message is so piercingly clear in the film grammar and in the script. It's like, oh, yeah, if we have a gun, I'll kill a guy.
Right. I'll just fucking shoot you.
I don't like your opinion. I like what you have and I don't have it. I'll just kill you. Simple.
Simple. Perfect. Also, you know, a moment for J.C. Flippin, one of the great character actors, who, you know, there's a tiny bit of swearing in J.C. Flippin,
Just
because he's got that strange face and the brusque manner and everything. He's so good in, what is it, The Killing. And God, he's wonderful. He's one of those faces you're always happy to see, like Sidney Greenstreet or... Cuddles Sakal or somebody like that. He's
so
wonderful.
He's beautiful. And she gives him a kiss. I thought you kissed me because I was pretty. One of the great lines. One of the great lines of all time. I was like, that. Look
Perfect
at that.
Little movie.
Great. Folks, apart from the many, many reasons to buy and see Winchester 73, I'm going to emphatically make Scout plug his terrific The Black Book and Anthony Mann Reader and say that apart from, you know, terrific audio commentaries from Paul Linderschmidt, apart from Adam Piron on the portrayal of Native Americans in the Western genre, and just Forces of Nature, Anthony Mann at Universal, a couple of great additions and special features, and an essay by Imogen Sarah Smith in this specific release. Scott, how can people get the Anthony Mann Reader to watch along with their 4K? Of Winchester 73.
A beautiful new 4K. So you can get yourself a paperback copy on Amazon. You can also get the Kindle reader there. If you go to patreon.com/honorzombie, you can pick it up for $14. It's 10 of that goes to me eventually. I'm sure I'll get my money one of these days. But those are the two places you can go. I might try to like raffle off a signed copy or something like that. So that's something to stay tuned for. But also, if you go to patreon.com/honorzombie and join up, you'll get most of the writing that appears in the book, as well as lately I've been doing pieces on Jacques Tourneur, on Don Siegel, on Clint Eastwood's directorial career. and Helmut Kohl at Sara and M. Night Shyamalan. In the last year, I've written about every one of their movies, and every week a new video essay. So there you go. Despite not really being a working film critic anymore, I'm still somehow the most prolific man in letters.
I was just gonna say that doesn't sound like someone who's not in film criticism anymore.
It's a real problem. A real problem I have.
it's like our revelation that if you take the guns, if you just take the guns away, you can't take his gun. You've got this Winchester. It's the one in 1,000. This is what happens. You're just compelled. It's like me in podcasts. You just can't help yourself.
Yeah, put a microphone in front of him and he's going to fucking draw it.
Otherwise, my wife has to take it away. She's like, why?
Yeah, seriously. It's not worth it. Yeah.
God. Yeah, this is an amazing. This is an amazing release. And I'm so glad I got to talk to you about it. And it's a terrific film, and it'll pop up occasionally. And they will, Criterion has done before and probably will again, do Anthony Mann little sections in their online carousel. So you can sort of see some of his great films all together. They are pretty readily available, but man alive, if you see this gorgeous 4K, even in the Academy ratio, it's just beautiful. It's just timeless. His use of the frame, Anthony Mann's, is so stunning. Terrific, unbelievable cast, who we did mention, Jimmy Stewart, Dan Dorea, Shelley Winters, Steve McNally, who plays Dutch Henry, Millard Mitchell, I want to shout him out as High Spade, terrific character actor, Charles Drake, John McIntyre, just really amazing cast, almost top to bottom. And
a lot of these guys would be back for some of the other Stewart Westerns, Bend of the River and The Naked Spur. They would come back and sort of provide the same, you know, support for Stewart. I think that was a company that really got along for a long time. It wasn't until the Tin Star in 58 that they finally split apart, Mann and Stewart, which was obviously a shame. They worked great together. But I think it was
underrated, that pairing. I still think it's underrated. Those two together, they got it. He got Jimmy Stewart, and Jimmy Stewart.
Well, he primed him for Hitchcock, you know, nobody else did, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's like he was stretching all those muscles, those vulnerabilities, those things. He was stretching them all, and then there you go, big guy. Run straight into maybe the best movie ever made. But
yeah, right.
arguably, Winchester 73, if you're a Western fan, if you're an Anthony Mann fan, or even if you're a Sam Peckinpah, Sergio Leone fan, this is an essential closing the gap for you. So available anywhere.
A lot of Butch Cassidy in there too.
So much Butch in this. So much. I thought you were kissing me because I was pretty. That could have been coming out of Paul Newman's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So great. Yes. Absolutely one of my favorite Westerns. I'm so glad I got to talk to you about it. And same. It's 90 minutes of bliss on a beautiful 4K from Criterion. So you can get that. You can pick that up. There'll be links in the show notes of where you can get it. But man, Scout, thank you so much again. This is always fun.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Until next time, stay well. I love you.
Love you too.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.